Welcome back to another episode of Nerd Tween in a Movie Podcast. I'm your host, Nerdpool Prime. I do apologize for having to take off last week. I had a lot of stuff going on. I'm working, but I'm also in school, so I had two tests and project due. So I had to take a break in order to get that done so I could continue to do stuff like this. So what's going to happen is I'm going to release two episodes this week. It's going to be two episodes at some point today and Sunday. I'm going to release this episode with my breakdown of episode 3 of Falcon and the Winter Soldier, The Power Broker. So if you haven't seen that, then you're a week behind, so there's not going to be any spoiler warnings for this part of the show. So I'm going to jump right in. So in episode 3, The Power Broker, the episode opens up with a commercial for a global reparation council. These are the people who are, quote-unquote, putting the world back to the way it was before the blip. These people are who the Flag Smashers are fighting against. These are the people who have displaced people all over the world. Their tagline, reset, restore, and rebuild, more like take back, kick out, and get back to the way things were. Then who is leading their ground military force but the new Captain America? And he's very aggressive, and this is the problem because he's supposed to be the hero for America, not this global reparations council. So he's overstepping his boundaries. Granted, it's not him really doing it. I'm sure he's been told to do this by the government, but that point where he is no longer just America's hero is what they were trying to say he is. So then when that guy spits in his face and he screams at him, "Do you know who I am?" And his answer is, "Yes, I do, and I don't care." And he says it in perfect English, showing that he understood everything that they were saying and was just playing stupid. And then when he's outside talking to Battlestar, you can see him kind of starting to lose it. This is the first real sign that we can see that John is actually unstable. He wants to be a good Captain America so bad, and he feels he should be respected as the new Cap, but time and time again, he's being disrespected and basically told what to do. And little by little, that's chipping away at him, which will culminate in the episode, in the events of episode 4, which we'll talk about tomorrow. I'm sorry, in the later episode. My apologies. I actually watched this episode, the episode 3, live on the live stream with Michael Roman from Everything Always on his YouTube channel. Now, he was watching it while we were watching, we were just talking about it. It was a great time. He has an amazing YouTube channel, and I definitely recommend checking him out. It's Everything Always or I Am Fires on Instagram. But I digress. When Bucky and Sam get to the prison, I just knew, like, the second Zemo saw Bucky, he was going to try to activate him, and that's why I said on the live with him. And Bucky goes in, obviously alone, to meet Zemo, and we don't even see his face before he starts the words. And Zemo is such a great character, and this is mostly due to the brilliant portrayal by Daniel Brühl. There is something about him that is just so compelling, especially as a villain. You know, he's supposed to be like this bad guy, but you can't help but love him. He's like the earthbound Loki archetype, the lovable villain with an accent that deep down a small part of you secretly hopes wins. When Zemo said, I know where to start, I knew instantly it was Madripoor. Madripoor, for those who don't know, is a famous, very famous location in the Marvel comics, especially for mutants. This place is where Wolverine first appeared as Patch in Wolverine number 1 in 1988. Madripoor, however, debuted initially in 1985 in the New Mutants number 32. According to Kevin Feige, Madripoor itself is one big Easter egg moving forward. When Bucky and Sam are talking about Zemo in the garage, I absolutely loved that after Sam said no offense, Bucky just immediately responded with offense. That seriously describes their relationship perfectly. Then the beautiful overlay of the prison breakout scene, it would come up later too. Technically Zemo broke himself out, so their hands are pretty much clear, in that, when Zemo arrives and gathers his things, you can see that iconic mask. And I'm really glad to see that the initial reports that he modeled his mask after Thanos to scare the Avengers were just another example of people pretending to have some secret insider information or inside knowledge and claiming that facts are that claiming facts that are actually theories. Clearly the mask has been in that spot, or at least the very least existed prior to Thanos ever even arriving on Earth in Infinity War. And Zemo has been in jail since the events of Captain America Civil War. So obviously that's not what actually it was modeled after. Now, in case you forgot or never saw Captain America Civil War, Zemo was revealed to be the leader of a Sokovian Special Forces team, and he used that experience and his patience to dismantle the Avengers from the inside. Because if a man has experience and patience, there is nothing that all they need is time. Zemo is incredibly intelligent, almost unbelievably polite. Even when he's getting yelled at, he still says, "My apologies." This is because he is royalty. This show continues to be continues the memeability trend that WandaVision started. You got two super back to back memes. You got the Sam and Bucky recreating the woman yelling at a cat with Zemo, and then the parallel with the Justice League memes about what's your superpower, and Bruce Wayne responds with "I'm rich." So we have another memeable show on our hands here, people. So Bucky's list of names is actually in the same book that Steve had when he came out of the ice. And that's actually an interesting little thing. So I'm guessing when he came back to being, you know, Bucky, Steve probably gave him his notebook saying, "These are the things I missed. So here's where you start." And then Sam brings up Trouble Man soundtrack. When Bucky says he likes 40s music, he's like, "No, I liked it." But Zemo had like the greatest line ever. And he delivered it with such, I don't even know, bravado, I guess, that it was just unbelievable. He says, "It's a masterpiece, James. Complete, comprehensive. It captures the African-American experience." And Sam, like, when I do these breakdowns, I have to watch the episodes over and over and over and over again to catch everything. And every time that scene happens, I laugh hysterically because he's out of line, but he's right. I mean, that's pretty much Zemo in a nutshell. Like, he's out of line for doing what he did, but he's not really wrong. So, back to the episode. Before we go to Madripoor, we can see Carly has to watch someone she loves die, like, right in her hands, even though she couldn't help her. And that loss is likely the trigger that leads to her escalation later in the episode. So, then we quick shot back over to Madripoor. According to Michael Roman, the bridge that they go under is somewhere in Atlanta, right by a bar. So he said he was going to go and drive his car up there and say he was in Madripoor. I have not seen it yet, so I'm waiting on that. Madripoor is basically a modern-day Tortuga, where all manner of nefarious characters mingle about. Now for a huge Easter egg, when they're walking through Madripoor, they pass a sign for a bar that says the Princess Bar. Now, this is a place where Wolverine frequented while in Lowtown under the alias Patch. So that's a big Wolverine Easter egg right there. And that's really awesome to see. It just confirms that they're coming. and that one specifically, a lot of people like me who like know all these little secret things will catch that on the first watch, no problem, even if they don't focus on it. But they literally made a point to, like, slowly pan over to, like, "Hey, everyone, get your phones out and Google this exact thing right here, and you'll see what we're talking about's coming." So I like that. There literally was like, "Hey, this is a giant Easter egg. Look!" And I definitely think that was wise on their part. And then when they get to the other bar, you know, it was great to see Bucky really get to let loose. Like, he was able to get out some much needed frustration without holding back. It did look like he did get lost in that for a second there, but I mean, it definitely was really nice, because in the past, you know, he when Bucky first came on the scene, he was pretty badass at Captain America. And then when he came back for Winter Soldier, he was like the utmost badass character that we had seen at that point. And then as his role progressed in the MCU, he got less and less like confrontational. He was just like kind of like a hired gun type thing where he was just shooting and not really like getting into the fight. And is this series has like done so well to highlight how skilled and how amazing Bucky really is. Due to his training with as the Winter Soldier, and that vibranium arm now, and the super soldier serum. I mean, he is definitely one of the most powerful humans, like strictly humans alive, at least that we know of in the MCU right now. I mean, besides the Wanda Maximoffs and the Doctor Strange and the Hulks, but I mean, besides that, who else is more powerful than Bucky? Really, think about it. But I digress. And Bucky, you know, he was playing his role very well, and Zemo even used him as a negotiating tool. And like Bucky's playing the role, you know, he got Zemo like tenderly stroked his face, his gentle stroking of the chin, and Bucky just played along and just stood there. And then Selby revealed, like, that was enough for Selby to go, okay, maybe this is the Winter Soldier. So she reveals that Dr. Wilfred Nagel was the person who recreated the Super Soldier Serum. Now, in the comics, Dr. Wilfred Nagel is a scientist who was working at Project Rebirth. In the comics, he recruited 300 African-American soldiers to be used as test subjects at Camp Cathcart. And there was only one survivor, Isaiah Bradley. And so obviously it's a little bit different in the MCU than it was in the comics, because this was back in World War II, in the comics. So it's a little bit different here, and Nagel isn't the one that was working there trying to, recreate the serum. He was using his blood to recreate the serum. So it's a little different, but it's still, the association's still there. And, you know, one thing I didn't like about that scene is, so we have Sam, right? Sam is this well-trained military operative and who was on the run for 2 years and was able to remove undetected from the world government, not just the American government, the world government, because he was in breach of all Sokovia Accords and broke out of prison. And you're telling me this man didn't put his phone on silent? You're going into a bar to risk your life and you don't have your phone on silent? Like, really? And I think that does a little bit disservice to his character. And that's one thing that this episode in particular, it seemed like people were making a point to show Sam as not being smart, which he very clearly is. Because he's the one who made Red Wing and is doing all these things, you know, to where he has all these technological advantages. And I don't understand why they did that this episode. But it was a fantastic episode. But I think that was a little bit off-putting for me. And then when everything started to go crazy there, Selby gets shot with a gunshot from outside. News travels fast, and we get a John Wick 2 scene where every single person in Madripoor Lowtown is after the bounty on their heads. Zemo breaks away from Bucky and Sam, and in the chaos, only to return. Why? I mean, he's been locked in prison, so once he gets away, why didn't he just run away? Well, he truly values making sure that there are no more super soldiers, and he values that more than his own freedom. And so for me, Zemo is happy to be assisting them, even if he doesn't like that Bucky's a super soldier or that Falcon or that Sam is an Avenger. He still wants to work with them because he knows that they're the best chance at that point to achieve his goal of stopping any more super soldiers from showing up. Excuse me. Then, who shows up as the guardian angel, of course? Sharon Carter. Still on the run, quote-unquote. Now, I have to say this. Sharon is definitely up to something. I think she's the one who killed Selby. Then, when she's confronting Sam, Bucky, and Zemo, she flat out just says, "And now Selby's dead," as if she had nothing to do with it. Unless there is another shooter that also wanted to kill Selby at the exact same time, I don't see how that is not Sharon's doing. But more on that in a little bit. Then there's another great callback to Captain America Civil War. Sharon sums up her role in Civil War perfectly. Sharon says, "I stole Steve's shield, remember? I also took the wings for your ass so that you could save his ass from his ass." And that is just pure gold. Again, memeability, like that right there is just perfect. So, and then she says that she didn't have the Avengers to back her up, and that's why she's off the grid in Madripoor. But why didn't she, though? I mean, she was working for the CIA. She was working for S.H.I.E.L.D. You're telling me she couldn't contact Sam? You're telling me she couldn't reach out to anyone that was associated with the Avengers that maybe knew Cap? I mean, are we really buying this? I don't. She's up to something. And then again, more on that in a little bit. Sharon then takes them to Hightown to keep them safe. She's apparently running a gallery that specializes in stolen artwork. Then, poor Sam, they all gang up on him. And Zemo and even Bucky come across as worldly. And Sam has to pull out his phone and Google what the piece in front of him is and how much it's worth. And then Bucky gets in a subtle little jab. What did Google say? Now, I want to say this. I could watch this version of Sharon on her own spinoff show, like, so bad. Like, she just doesn't hold back. And she even makes a comment about sexy Sam shirtless. And she just calls it like she sees it. Like Sharon says, "You know, the whole hero thing is a joke, right? The way you gave up that shield, deep down, you must know it's all hypocrisy." And Zemo responds, "He knows, and it's not so deep down." And Sam just sits there in silence and does not correct them, does not do anything, which speaks volumes. That means he agrees with them. And then Sharon continues about how is the new Cap. And then Bucky responds, "Don't get me started." And then Sharon immediately, "Please, you buy into all the stars and stripes bullshit. Before you were his pet psychopath, you were Mr. America, Cap's best friend." Bucky says, "Wow, she's kind of awful now. And I disagree with you, my friend. I think you mean to say she's awesome now, because she is freaking awesome." Sam continues to show exactly why he is the true embodiment of Captain America. He does what's right because it's the right thing to do. Like, when he was talking with Sharon, he didn't try to make excuses. He just apologized. "Yes, I'm sorry I didn't do it before, but this is what I'm going to do for you right now." And that's the type of person that should be Captain America. He's not hiding behind a symbol or an ideal. He is that symbol and ideal. He's the hero the people need, and because he understands the pain and suffering of so many people around the world, that's definitely something that correlates with who Captain America was when Steve was Captain America. And now we got to talk about it, the Zemo dance. And I love how Daniel Brühl just goes on social media and says that it was an impromptu dance and that there's an extended version of his dance. And social media finds out, asks Marvel to release the Zemo cut, and they just did. Like, yes, I know it's different between releasing footage you already have and that was just cut from a show because of time. It's completely different than agreeing to spend millions and millions of dollars doing a film franchise you don't want to do for whatever reason. But, man, how funny is it that the Marvel fans say, "Release this," and then Marvel just immediately does it. And then we got the DC fans that are like trying so hard to get them to restore the Snyderverse, and they just won't do it. I mean, like I said, I know they're a completely different spectrum, but I just find that funny how they're the two sides to the coin. And now let's go back to the episode. So can we just talk about how badass Sharon really, how Sharon is? I mean, I counted at least six mercenary assassin types with automatic weapons out. She just took them out like back to back to back. And some of those fights, fight scenes were actually one shots, and they had her in the shot. So bravo. I mean, to her, I mean, she absolutely nailed those scenes, and she came off as such an absolute badass. And this show is continuing the incredible cinematography that WandaVision showed when they did the, you know, the period pieces and, you know, the effects to that time period. And then you got this, like, with all of the great music and the colors and everything that has just been fantastic. Shot for shot, it's been some of the best MCU stuff we've got from a cinematography standpoint. And then, you know, when you cut back to the episode, when they find that secret compartment, you know, it's interesting that Zemo is the one who found it, because, you know, you got the military good guy, and then you got this like former assassin, and the royalty guy is the one who found the secret compartment. I think that's a little interesting. But also, he is a, you know, sophisticated military-trained person, so that's obviously something that they probably would have found eventually. Now, Nagel, when they get down to his lab, he stated that he was working with Hydra to recreate the super soldier serum after what happened in Siberia. Then he was recruited by the CIA, and then he was able to isolate the serum in test subject one, I think they called him, Isaiah Bradley's blood, and he was able to recreate the serum, and he did so right before he turned to dust, as he said. Then the power broker came in and backed the recreation of the research. And now this is going to key onto one of my theories. I think that the power broker is Thunderbolt Ross, and because he would have the ties to CIA and would know likely what Nagel's work was entailing. He also had access to working super soldier serum during the events of the Hulk movie, and he gave it to Emil Blonsky's character and made him into a super soldier without the machines and everything. And now, while that movie did have a different actor portraying Bruce Banner, it is canon. It's been referenced many times, including Mark Ruffalo telling Tony Stark that the last time he was in New York, he broke Harlem. It's a clear reference to that movie where him and the Abomination literally broke Harlem. And then, again, he even mentioned that he got real low and tried to kill himself with a gun, and that was actually filmed in a deleted scene on that that Edward Norton Hulk movie, which honestly I really enjoyed that movie, to be honest with you. I hate the fact that Universal's playing hardball and won't let them make another Hulk movie, or maybe they don't want to, but I that was like, especially for it being one of the first like MCU movies, it was pretty badass. It was awesome. I really enjoyed it. So then Nagel was able to use Isaiah Bradley's blood to isolate the super soldier serum and even improve it, to where, you know, you didn't need any machines, and, you know, you didn't have the insane growth. You just gained all the abilities of a super soldier. And it appears that when he was not willing, to help, Danya Madani, that's when Carly broke in and stole the vials of the super soldier serum. And then when it's revealed that there are no vials of the super soldier serum there, Zemo takes that opportunity. And you notice that he didn't have a gun when he went in there. He was feeling around and found the, you know, the hidden gun that is in every bad guy's laboratory. And he used that gun to just flat out kill Nagel because in his mind, that's the best way to stop the Super Soldier Project. But I'm just going to throw this out there. I mean, in this day and age, are we really going to go with there's no backup? I'm just saying. You tell me there's no cloud storage place where that's there? I don't have a heart. Something that valuable, there's no way you don't have a backup. I'm sorry. There's just no way. And then Zemo, again, gets away. Sam and Bucky are just really great. They kind of did the whole go left, the other left, recreation of the Guardians of the Galaxy scene. They both have this incessant need to do their own thing and not really portray that they care about the other's well-being, and they genuinely do. You can tell. They always ask each other after something crazy happens, are you okay? Well, you good? Like, they always do that even though they're pretending like they don't care about each other. They just have different views about very, very big issues. And that's why there's a problem there with them. It's not that they don't care about each other. It's that they just don't know how to express their anger towards each other for what's happened. And then, you know, just when it appeared that all is lost and they're all out of ammo and Zemo comes back to save the day, showing how badass he is, putting on his iconic comic book, almost exactly comic book accurate mask. In the comics, I think it had more, it was a little bit longer. It wasn't just like a mask, it was like a hood almost. But I am not nitpicking that at all. I am such a huge fan of what they did with that mask. It really is beautiful to see the parallels between that and the comics. And then he comes back again, obviously, because he knows that he has to try to stop Carly because now they're super soldiers and they shouldn't exist. Sam, Bucky, and Zemo drive off into the sunset. And it's great that Bucky gets a little bit of payback for the scene in Civil War where he wouldn't, where Sam wouldn't move up his seat. Sam gets to the back and just straight up asks him, "You gonna move up your seat? You're not gonna move up your seat, are you?" Nope. Then Sharon meets an unknown character by this fancy car. She tells her that they have a problem, well, a couple of them, and that she was gonna tell her in the car. I got a very CIA like power suit vibe from that woman. I didn't see any earpiece, and you know, we didn't find out anything else after that. But I, like I said, Sharon is definitely up to something. Then we cut to Carly talking with one of her soldiers, I guess, and they're talking about what they would do if everything, you know, what they always imagined themselves doing. She said she wanted to be a teacher like Madani. And we get another really, really cool X-Men Easter egg. On the gate, you can see an X in a circle, which is a clear homage to the X-Men symbol. That moment's really humanizing for Carly. You see that she's not really a villain per se. She's just an idealist, I would say, that she just wants... She thinks her way is the correct way, and she's going to do anything in her power to make sure that dream is realized. Then we go back to Sam and Bucky. They're having this discussion about the shield. And, you know, Sam, now after learning everything about Isaiah and just how, you know, America treats African-Americans and what that symbol means... He talks about instead of maybe giving it to the museum, he should have just destroyed it. And Bucky says that shield represents a lot of things to a lot of people, including me. The world is upside down and we need a new cap and it ain't going to be Walker. So before you go and destroy it, I'll take it from him myself. It's basically Bucky telling Sam, like, if you're not going to be Captain America, then I will be. And I would definitely say that with his abilities and his training, Bucky is definitely suited to be Captain America. And in the comics, he does portray Captain America for some time. So it's definitely got some basis of reality in it, that's for sure. But I definitely feel that Sam's going to get the shield because even though, and you know, this episode and this whole series really is showing that many people don't know what's going on with the enhanced individuals. Like, people don't know that the Winter Soldier isn't a bad guy anymore. Like, people don't know that he is pardoned. Like, they don't know that most of the events, they're kind of oblivious to it. And then up until the events of the Avengers, and the aliens coming from the sky and, you know, some things like that, people don't really know what's going on. So that's something that is interesting to see, because when you're looking at these movies and shows, you know, we kind of look at it in a vacuum, like, because all the characters in the show that aren't just like background characters are these enhanced and powerful individuals. So it's nice to see how the world is seeing the heroes that we see. It's kind of interesting to see that little extra, like, connective tissue and extra, like, just volume to what they're doing here. And then the Flag Smashers break into the GRC facility and steal a ton of supplies, like food, water, it looked like even a keg. And Carly tells one of the people they have tied up, that you had a 6 months worth of, or I think it said 6 months worth of food and stuff just sitting there. And, you know, it's proving Carly's point that they have people that are hungry and starving, and then this place is holding on to resources and not giving it to them for whatever reason. But however, after the mission is over, they blow up a car, which blows up the entire building. We find out the events of what happens after that in the next episode. And like I said, I'll have that breakdown coming up a little bit later today. Carly believes that these means justify the end now. And like I said, that the loss of Madani definitely accelerated her need to be violent. Because, you know, before, they were stealing vaccines and they were stealing all these different things to give to people. They weren't hurting people. Really. Like, anyone, except for people who just got in their way. But this was an escalation to almost terrorism. And Carly says, you know, this is the only language that they understand. And she's not wrong. I mean, definitely not wrong. Violence, unfortunately, has always been a catalyst for change, especially in an American society, unfortunately. Then we cut back to Sam, Bucky, and Zemo in Latvia, where they're following their next lead. Bucky, you know, he, you see him, it seems very uncomfortable, and he says he's going to go for a walk to clear his head, and he finds the Kamoya beans from Wakanda forming a makeshift breadcrumb trail, which he follows, of course, and he finds Adora Milaje. She says that she's here for Zemo, and the episode ends, cut to black. And, of course, the reason that the Wakandans want Zemo, as Sam mentioned earlier in the episode, is that he killed King T'Chaka in that movie and then framed Bucky for it. This show is kind of like a Civil War spinoff as much as just another installment of the MCU, really. And I'm totally here for it. Captain America Civil War is a very fun movie. I am a huge fan of the Civil War comics, so it did let me down somewhat, because the grand scope of the Civil War in the comics was pretty much all-encompassing, and it's one of the greatest runs. I have almost every single issue, including all the connected ones, and I've read it from the start to finish numerous times. It's really good. So while it didn't live up to my high expectations, because, and I spoke about this before, when I was younger, I stopped collecting and even reading comics for many years, and what brought me back was the Civil War comics. I just saw them in a Books a Million, and I said, Civil War, and I can't remember which one it was. I think it was a Wolverine Civil War, if I'm not mistaken, but I picked it up and just started reading it, and I was hooked, and I got back into comics pretty much every day after that, until, you know, some of my ex-girlfriends thought it wasn't cool anymore. I had to choose between the comics and them. And of course, my dumbass chose them. Good job. So that's the breakdown for that episode of Falcon and the Winter Soldier, The Power Broker. And like I said, there's going to be another episode coming a little bit later that will break down the newest episode, The Whole World is Watching. So like I said, that's it for that. But I do want to talk about some cool things that I got going on right now. If you're into comic books, there's a lot of great comics that are out right now from numerous studios, not just Marvel and DC. There's Boom, there's Source Point Press, there's Image Comics, of course, Valiant, and they're all doing great work. And I do comic book reviews on my Nerdpool page, Nerdpool Reborn on Instagram. Go check it out. You can always do hashtag Nerdtween comic reviews to take a look at all the ones I got there. I'm currently doing all the Star Wars runs. I'm doing crossover, Donny Cates crossover. I'm behind. I just finished the second book. I have all of them. I just haven't read all of them yet. DC, Future State, and Infinite Frontier. And, of course, some of the King in Black. And the, you know, just obviously Berserker and my favorite, Radiant Black. So if you're interested in comics, you should check that out. Also, there has been a lot of, and I talked about this before, a lot of hate towards Wyatt Russell because they don't like him as Captain America. And granted, at the time of this recording, the newest episodes come out, and it's even harder to say things like this for the character side. But I'm talking right now about the actor. His portrayal has been stellar. It has been something of true just admiration for the craft. He is delivering on a hated character so well that people are having this intense emotional response that excuse me, has led to them bullying him and sending him death threats and causing him to like deactivate his social media. And that is absolutely unacceptable. When is this crap gonna stop where fans, toxic fans, attack people for what they feel are injustices? Like the same thing happened with Elizabeth Olsen when people were mad that she didn't say anything specifically about the passing of Chadwick Boseman. People deal with things in different ways. She was just because she didn't post anything on social media doesn't mean she wasn't grieving. It doesn't mean that something is not going on with her in regards to that. Think about it. Chadwick Boseman didn't tell anyone he had cancer, and people were online making fun of him when he did that one of those last IG lives where he was really skinny. People were talking about how he was on drugs, and they didn't know he was – yeah, he was on drugs, chemotherapy. Like, you know, it's absolutely disgusting what some people – the lengths that some people will go to – I don't even know what it is at this point. Like, just to be a troll? Like, what is the point of attacking an actor for portraying a role? If you want to be mad at someone, I guess you could be mad at the writers or the character itself for making this character that way. But remember that the actor is portraying a fictional character. Remember that there are two sides to this. And also remember that if he wasn't doing such a damn good job, then you wouldn't be so damn angry. And you know what? I and a lot of other people who actually give a shit are definitely going to praise Wyatt Russell for his unbelievable portrayal of this character. And I really do hope, because I've been saying this, and I really wish I would have made a graphic about it. I feel by the end of the series, we're going to feel bad for his character. Granted, again, after the most recent episode, that's even harder to say, but I digress. And I've said, what I think is going to happen, is going to lead us to judging him too harshly. And like I said, I know everyone who's watching this now, like, well, you're a week behind, so I don't know how that's accurate. That is, that's what he did. I understand. But again, it's all, you got to see the big picture and what they're about to do. And I'll get into that on the next episode that I release later today. But that is all for this episode, this first episode of Nerd Tweet a Movie Podcast after the week off. I just have to say thank you so much to everyone who listens. I have a great group of people who are listening and been giving me feedback, and I appreciate all the love and support. And I've got some great things coming in store soon, so stay tuned. More is coming very soon.